never what they seem. Many scientists contributed to the report. They studied numbers that were on computer screens and wrote out long equations and drew many diagrams that helped prove their point. Even these pages you think you're reading could be quite different from what you think you see, the report explained. It's possible this report is just a sprawling aloe plant or a mid-century modern maple credenza. You could try to study it more closely, but you will never know for certain. No word on whether or not things have been what they have seemed before this report, or whether they will be what they seem at some point in the future. And now, traffic. There is a man walking out into the desert. He doesn't have much. At one point he had a new job and a nice car and people in his life. Now he only has his gray pinstripe suit, stained with dirt, and a $5 bill. Soon, he thinks, he will have less. The less he has, the more things make sense to him, although he doesn't understand why. He thinks back to the men he had been in the past. The man with a lover. The man with a job. The man driving without a destination. The man with a fancy watch in a place where time doesn't work. The man standing out in the desert with blood all over his hands. The man entering a pawn shop. They all seem to be different people. People who didn't know each other, although they might vaguely recognize each other from different corners at a party none of them liked. But he also knew that they were all him. That all of them still lived inside his body somewhere, that they could never leave, just recede into a background hum in his mind. The young man is in the desert. He is looking back at a world that does not belong to him. Nothing belongs to him. He is looking around at a landscape that desolates outward forever. So he stops where he is. As good as any other place. He looks up. Again, it is there in the sky, the planet of awesome size, lit by no sun, an invisible titan, all thick black forests and jagged mountains and deep, turbulent oceans. It is very close now. So close that he wonders if he could touch it. As he reaches up, he thinks he sees movement on its surface. Through the canopy of the forests and upon the slopes of the mountains and on the shores of the churning ocean. People. Maybe. Crowds of people all wrapped in white cloth. They are leaning into each other like dropped puppets. They sway lifelessly. He feels horror in the back of his throat, but still he reaches up. He can't help himself. It's just what he does next. This has been Traffic. And now a word from our sponsors. Do you have lost memories? Are there any memories that once were there but have since been misplaced? Or taken? Forcibly taken from you? Well, of course, how would you know if you had? So let's try this a different way. Do you ever feel like there is a gap in yourself? Do you ever act in ways that you do not understand and then immediately regret? Do you feel like there is a great abyss of meaning in your very core that will never be filled, and yet you cannot help but try to fill it? Then yes, and you have had many things taken from you, memories among them, and what you need is LifeLock. After signing up for LifeLock, you will be immediately picked up by our friendly armed technicians and transported in protective restraints to a secure and heavily guarded facility, where you will be safely locked away in an unmarked cell with no windows or lights, so no one will be able to see you or get to you. Once you are locked away and your identity has been destroyed in all possible records, you will be forever safe from identity theft, impersonation, assassination, assignations, and, of course, memory removal. You will never do anything again that might put you at risk of harm. Everything you could conceivably do puts you at risk of harm. You must stay still in the darkness. We will hold you close to our chest, almost suffocatingly close, in the warm still of our empty forever. We'll protect you from this world by completely removing you from it. LifeLock. This has been a message from our sponsors. Oh, I don't know if I've mentioned my boyfriend Carlos on the air before, but... 47. Mom! Josh protested as Diane wrapped her arms around his sloped, furry shoulders. She gripped his body tight, placing one hand across his wide back and the other hand to the back of his head, between the tall, pointed ears. Josh! She said over and over. Josh! Josh! Jackie placed her casted hand on his mother's back. Diane concentrated on breathing deep, full breaths. Thank you, Jackie. Mom, Josh blushed. It's okay, it's okay. Josh, it's not okay. I haven't seen you in a week. What have they done to you? Nothing, Mom, I'm fine. He gently removed her arms from his body. She looked into his eyes, or into the eyes of his body, looking for him. Her own eyes hardened. Her tears dried. Her pupils contracted, lids narrowing. He felt the moment turning. I took your car for the afternoon, he said, pleading the case in what he failed to keep from a whine. I'm sorry. I found out that my dad had moved to King City, and then I found that paper in your purse, and then I thought I could take the car to King City to look up stuff about my dad. I thought you'd be gone the whole day. You've been gone a lot lately. I mapped it out, and it looked like it was maybe only a couple hours' drive. I was planning to come back tonight, but I ran up on the curb into someone's lawn. I wanted to have cool-looking wings, but it was hard to drive with them. I was all pushed forward, and they kept getting in my eyes. I dented your fender, and ruined their shrubbery, and crushed this row of plastic garden flamingos that got stuck in the bumper, and apparently I ran Jackie off the road, but I didn't see that. I'm so sorry, Jackie. The wings were in my eyes, and I didn't know. I was scared you'd be mad about your car, so I tried to drive home, but the city around me wasn't familiar-looking anymore. I saw this building marked City Hall, which is where Ty told me I could find all kinds of stuff out about my real dad, so I came in here. That was like an hour ago. Josh, you've been gone for days. Mom, you just texted me a couple hours ago, and I said, good, be home later. See? He held up his phone. Time is weird in Night Vale, the mayor said. Shut up, Jackie said. The cloud of black flies rose, but she moved at them without hesitation. They buzzed louder and retreated to the other side of the room. It's not his fault, Diane, Jackie said. It isn't. You and I both know that. We know it together. Diane continued to stare at Josh. Her eyes burned on the cusp between crying and yelling. But maybe, Josh, Jackie said, we finish driver's ed when we get back to town. Or maybe you don't need hooves when you drive. Straight-up hands will do the trick, all right? Full human form when you drive. I'm sorry. I didn't know. I didn't know. Josh lowered his head. He saw the deep yellow and purple bruises around the edges of Jackie's cast and along her neck, and cringed in shame. Let's just go home, Jackie said. You and Josh can take your car, and I'll follow in the Mercedes. That is absolutely not possible, said the mayor in the tan jacket. Shut up, Jackie said again. She moved toward him, her face set. The flies regrouped into an opaque cloud between her and the man. She stepped forward into them. The flies swarmed onto her skin, and into her clothes, and onto her face, and into her eyes, and her nose, and her mouth. Their guts oozed onto her tongue as they crunched between her teeth. She batted at them with her uninjured arm. but they wouldn't release even as she got to his desk and grabbed the pair of scissors leaning against the rim of a coffee mug. She held up the scissors. The mayor moved back, gawping at her fly-covered body, everyone else in the room forgetting his look of terror the moment they looked away. She brought the scissors down, driving a blade into her cast and sawing. The cast resisted, and the blades were not sharp, but she hacked with a fury. The flies retreated one by one as she worked herself into a sweat, fighting against her own cast. Her skin was swollen and red where the flies had been. Finally, dull blades and all, she ripped off the top of the cast, exposing a hand still clutching a paper that said, King City. She held it up to the man in the tan jacket. Oh, yes, of course. He walked over and plucked the paper from her hand, like a person taking a slip of paper out of another person's hand, and tossed it into the trash can, where it stayed. He did the same with the paper in Josh's hand. Jackie stared at her empty palm, breathing hard from exertion and relief. She clasped and unclasped her sticky, sore fingers, reveling in the emptiness of them. Now then, said the man in the tan jacket, that's done. And Josh will be back to you sooner or later, I'm sure. No, Diane said. Jackie was too struck by the burden that had just been lifted from her, and would not be able to do this confrontation for her. She would have to do it herself. You awful, forgettable man, Diane said. You will not keep him. You've infected my town with your blank face and your false memories. I am sorry no one knows who you are. I really am. I'm sorry that no one remembers you are mayor. I'm sorry for your town. She felt another Diane crossing a street somewhere else, arms full with groceries, and yet another, looking idly at the passing scenery outside of a bus window. I'm sorry you've resorted to taking other people's children. I wasn't taken, Mom. Josh, honestly, you are not old enough to know the difference. I'm sorry you have to resort to taking other people's children. Maybe the problem isn't with Troy. Maybe the problem is with you. Maybe if you were a better mayor, you wouldn't be forgotten. Good deeds don't go unnoticed. If there was an economy and good roads and schools, no one would try to elect a new leader every few months. The man in the tan jacket's eyes darkened. Jackie saw his eyes. They were unforgettable. And maybe, just maybe, Diane said, her hand waving in asynchronous rhythm to her speech. A good father only has to be a good father, not a good mayor, not a man with a memorable face. Look at yourself, Evan, or whatever the fuck your name is. Josh, I'm sorry I cursed. Evan, be accountable to your wife and family, and they will care enough to know who you are. Govern your city, and you won't have to infect mine. Be a father to your child, and you won't have to steal mine. The mayor backed up to his seat, but did not sit. His flies stacked themselves in a subdued pyramid on his shoulder. Diane Creighton, I have infected no one. You misunderstand the situation. I came to Night Vale because there was no place weirder, and I thought someone there would understand. But my long conversations were forgotten. My pleas went unnoticed. So I started to write it down. A simple message that would stick better. That, in fact, it would be impossible to put down. He winced apologetically at Jackie. I'm sorry about that. I didn't think people would mind that much. I need the people of your weird town to tell me how to unweird my own. I was desperate. Desperation does not breed empathy or clear thinking. You ruined my life, said Jackie. He shrugged. That was all he would have to say on that. Please understand, I didn't want to force Josh. I knew he would be curious about his father. I just wanted to give him the information he would need to find him. I just wanted to give him the opportunity, a piece of paper with the town's name on it, and I knew, somehow, once given it, that he would take it.
Jackie was trying to understand the implication of what he was saying. All of that, all that I went through, Jackie said. It wasn't even for me? You were trying to get the paper to Diane and Josh? Why would you give it to me? The man shrugged again. I didn't know what Josh looked like. He could have been anything. So I gave the paper to as many people as I could, hoping that one of them, eventually, would be him. None of them ever were. That's when I decided that, as much as I didn't want Diane knowing about this, I would have to get close to her and see if she would give Josh the paper. So you understood that what you were doing was wrong? Diane said. If you had just given that paper to him, it would have stuck. But you tried to keep it from him. Or maybe you just didn't remember that you had it. I should have made it so you couldn't get rid of it, but then you wouldn't have been able to give it to Josh. And anyway, I'm just a mayor of what is, after all, only a small town. I can't think of everything. The flies buzzed sympathetically. Or that was their intention. It sounded no different than the rest of their buzzing. Mom? Josh put a tentacular arm around Diane. I want to stay. I want to help. It's not dangerous. It's a chance for me to meet my dad, to talk to him. I can really help these people. Josh, we're leaving. We will talk about your father later. This town needs me to stay. Mom, I... No, said Jackie. No. They just need one of Troy's kids to stay. And we have another one of those. Troy's my father, too. Diane and Josh and the man in the tan jacket all turned to face her. Even the flies stopped flying, landing on the closest surface and turning to face her. You? Said the man. Anything you could learn from Josh, you could learn from me. And if you're not putting me in some lab, I don't mind helping you. You're not like a mad scientist, right? This is just a research project. Jackie, no. Diane, yes. Josh has you and you have him. You are a family. What do I have? Years of repetition and a mother I can barely remember? This is no better, but this is no worse. And if I keep your family together, then at last I'll have done something that isn't running a pawn shop. Take Josh, okay? Take your son and leave. Diane did not want to do that. She saw the waver in Jackie's posture and the way she leaned her hand on the wall. She was not well, and she needed Diane to help her. They needed each other. But there was Josh. And as much as she loved, and maybe she did, maybe she loved Jackie, she loved Josh more. Dusk had turned to night, and the cheap overhead lighting in the office accentuated the unimpressive realness of this man's life. His ballpoint pens, his worn-out coat, probably one of only a couple of jackets he owned, the chipped paint on the walls, the wrinkles streaking out from his eyes and nose. Diane felt herself at that very moment getting a thick piece of skin removed from her back. The doctor was taping the wound closed and telling her to come back for results next week. Diane felt herself filling out a pet adoption form at a shelter. Diane felt herself falling off a ladder. She felt herself riding an elevator. She felt herself living in a moon colony hundreds of years in the future. She felt so many of her. But still, she was alone with this decision. I'm young, yes, said Jackie. But I'm also much older than you can imagine, Diane. I'm older than I can imagine. I have all the time in the world. I'll continue being 19 with no connections, no one to give me a reason to grow a day older. I have a mother who will miss me, sure, but she already saw me through childhood. You need to have the same chance. You need to help your son be a better man than his father. Josh opened his mouth to protest. Josh, I get it, man. I do. Jackie said. I grew up without a father, same as you. But you will have time. Later, after your mother has finished what she needs to do. The next time you see me, maybe you and I will be the same age, and we can have this talk again. I'd like that." Diane turned to her, but before their eyes met, Diane saw the window. The night reflected everything in the room back at her. There was a woman in the window, translucent and warped, wearing what she was wearing, standing the way she was standing, making the same small movements she was making, and looking deep into her eyes. She did not recognize the woman in the window, even though she had seen her many times.
"You know I'm right," Jackie said.
"I'll accept whatever decision you make," said the mayor in the tan jacket. "Either one is fine with us. You just have to make a choice." Diane put her hand out to Jackie, who took it. Jackie was crying, but calm. She accepted what would have to happen next. Diane did not break eye contact with the woman in the window.
"No," Diane said. "I don't."
"Oh, come on," the man said. "Yes, you do. Get on with it, please."
"This is not about King City, and it's not about Troy's children. It's about Troy. He has infected King City with our town's weirdness."
"Asshole."
"Exactly, Jackie. What an asshole. And what an asshole this guy is." She pointed at the asshole in the tan jacket.
He seemed much taller than before, his flies spread out behind him, an angry, buzzing aura.
"You must choose," he roared. "You must choose who will stay, or I will choose for you."
"You're not staying here," she said to Jackie, ignoring him.
"And Josh is not staying here."
Jackie nodded.
"You're right. It's not our fault. It's not us should be solving these problems. It's time for Troy to do it."
"And Troy's not staying here. It's time for Troy to go home."
"Damn right it is."
"Stop talking and choose which child," the man shouted.
No one was listening.
"I met a group of him at the bar. Good a place to talk to him as any."
"Then let's go." The woman in the window walked away. But Diane did not move. She had a sudden moment of doubt. What if she was wrong? What if she was making a mistake? Her reflection was gone, and she still could not move. And then she felt Jackie take her hand.
"I'm with you," Jackie said gently. "Let's go."
She hooked her injured arm through Josh's tentacular arm and led them both out the door and back up the hall. The man in the tan jacket followed them into the hallway.
"Where are you going? Come back here at once!"
The flies buzzed around him. None of the three looked back, and the buzzing grew faint as they pushed open the front door into the dusty night air.
"You must choose! You must choose!"
said a distant voice. And then the door closed, and it was silent once again. 48.
"Troy!"
Jackie shouted.
"Get out here right now, Troy!" Diane shouted.
The first Troy who emerged from the bar was the one with the shiner, bloomed now to violet. He looked dazed, possibly concussed. Jackie held the door open and ushered them all out, helping with a pull on the sleeve or a shove on the shoulder in case any of them hesitated. Some were wobbly from the beer. Others, strong and chipper, and ready to drive home. Troy Walsh was prepared for all contingencies. Troy Walsh was confused about what was happening.
"Troy, get out here. Come on."
Jackie herded them all outdoors. Imagine a 32-year-old man. Imagine a 32-year-old man who is many men. They all look like the same man because they are all the same man, have always been the same man. Imagine a 32-year-old man who could fix your car and file your taxes and mix you an intoxicating cocktail and paint your miniature collectibles.
Imagine a 32-year-old man born with the ability to be all things to all people, but nothing to any one person. Imagine the look on his face when he steps out of a bar, a multitude of him, and sees the woman he, for a short time, always loved 15 years ago. Imagine the look on his face when he sees a boy he does not recognize, but knows exactly who he is. Imagine his mouth opening slightly. Imagine the crack of verbal thought widening across his many countenances. Imagine the words visible in his eyes as he looks up, trying to shake out the logic and dislodge the emotions as the crack opens wide and humid breath hums in to prepare for a flood of words. "Shut your mouth," Diane said. "Don't say a word." She extended her arm in front of Josh, who had also stepped forward to speak. "I will let you speak in a moment, Josh." Diane looked at Troy. She looked at each and every one of him.
"Stay there," her eyes said. "If I can see you, you cannot move."
"This is your son, Josh. I call him your son because words can mean certain things. It is not the right word, but it is the correct word. Behind you is your daughter, Jackie. I am not here to ask for support. I am certainly not here to ask for anything on behalf of Josh or Jackie. I am here to tell you something on behalf of me and all those you are affecting. You are to come home, Troy Walsh. You are to come back to Night Vale and leave this town. You are many, and you are helpful, and you are kind. But meaning well is not doing well. You mean well, but you do not do well. You are destroying this time and space by bringing the strangeness of our time and place into it. We belong in Night Vale, all of us. It is our home. Go home, Troy." The Troys all glanced at each other. Some had looks of sincere grief and shame. Some had doubtful grins and smug elbows. One waved her away and staggered back toward the bar, but Jackie kicked him in the shins and shoved him back to the group. Diane persisted. "You have helped many people with your many skills, but also, you're an irresponsible little shit. Both of those are true. Truth can be contradictory. You are not forgiven your lapses by your non-lapses. How many children do you have? How many have you left behind? Forget it. I don't care. What I care about is, what is Jackie's mother's name? How old is Jackie? What does your son look like? Behind all the physical forms, what does your son look like? What's his favorite food? Is he dating? What's the person's name?" Troy looked at each other. One scratched his head. One burped. One stood straighter, uncertain but willing to give the questions a shot. "No, don't try to answer. You don't know the answers. Don't waste our time guessing. Here's another question you can't answer. What does a father do? What kind of job is that? In all your infinite incarnations, is there one single good dad or partner in there?" "Hey, now, hey." The Troy who had tried to leave was stumbling forward, the sober Troys unsuccessfully trying to restrain him, shaking their heads and muttering discouragements. "No, hey, I'm going to respond. I'm not just going to listen to this. I did come back. I'm living in Night Vale again." A few of the other Troys nodded, although they said nothing. "I was going to come see you guys. Come see Josh, but I just hadn't gotten around to it. There were some other jobs to do first. People needed my help. But I was coming. I would have been right there." "No one needs your help," said Jackie, sneering at her father, a man who expressed multitudes but contained nothing. "It's you that needs the act of helping. You do it for yourself and not for anyone else. Or you would have left this town when your help knocked it off the map. Instead, you nudged a smatter of you back to Night Vale like crumbs at birds. That's not a return. That's a toe in the water. That's a minimum of effort. You help and help, but you're lazy. You're goddamn lazy.
The more drunk Troys glanced at each other, nervous. One of the sober Troys stepped forward.
I didn't feel I had earned that yet, Troy said, looking only at Diane, who he seemed less intimidated by. I didn't feel I was ready to see you. I was really young, you know, and that's a terrible excuse, but it's what I was. And now I'm older. I can be many things. I've learned I don't have to run. If you would have me. All of me. He gestured to all of him around him. I would happily be part of your lives again.
This is not an invitation to be part of our lives, said Diane. This is a demand that you return home.
Asshole, said Jackie.
The Troys, en masse, turned to Josh. Josh, this is a strange way to first meet. And you don't have to let me be your father. I need to earn that. But I'd like to earn it. I will be there. I will do my best, much better than before, to be a man you can trust as a father, or whatever relationship we can build. I owe you that.
Diane allowed her son to answer for himself, against every instinct.
Jackie nodded reassurance at her. Josh didn't answer, instead turning to Diane, his eyes pleading, his face looking similar to Troy's for the first time in his life.
You don't have to ask permission, she said. Speak your mind. Say what you want.
Josh swallowed. He was quiet. The Troys were quiet. Everyone waited. When he spoke, the words were soft, but clear.
Okay, Josh said, and the Troys flashed proud grins. But you've been gone 15 years. She raised me just fine without you, so it's a little shitty for you to talk to me like I need you. Sorry, Mom, for saying shitty.
I mean, Jackie. Jackie runs her own store, and she's awesome. She's doing great, right, Jackie?
You tell him, Antlers.
Jackie smiled with her voice, not her mouth. Josh blushed, one hand gently and unconsciously touching the structure coming out of his head.
I'd be interested in getting to know you, Josh continued, but you don't get to send 4 or 5 of yourselves. You don't get to be everywhere. You live in Nightvale or nowhere, and when you're there, it's all of you or none of you.
Troy opened his mouths. He closed his mouths. He looked with sober eyes and drunk eyes around at himself.
Lucinda, Jackie said.
Huh? He said.
My mother's name is Lucinda, Jackie said.
She turned and limped away, having nothing left to say or any desire left to hear. A few, but not all of the Troys, nodded knowingly at this. A few, but not all of the Troys, looked at their shoes.
Is this all of you? Diane said.
Most of us, the Troys said in unison.
Go get the rest of you together. You're moving home now, Troy Walsh.
Diane followed Jackie, but Josh stayed, watching the men, all of them gaping at him, doing nothing. Then, one by one, they went back into the bar. The especially drunk one leaned on the door frame and held his son's stare for a moment. Then, he was gone too.
I don't think he's coming, Mom.
Diane and Jackie just kept walking. There was nothing left to say. Either the right thing would be done, or it wouldn't. Josh stayed where he was, watching the empty outside of the bar. He felt like crying, but his current physical form wasn't able to do that. He had thought for a moment that things would be different, but they were the same. He looked down at his hooves for a long time,
trying to gather himself enough to give up and leave. He brought his head up at the sound of a door opening. The drunk Troy was back. He nodded at his son, and the Troys, one by one, came out of the bar, a slow, staggering army of them, following the women back home. 49.
Diane and Jackie and Josh stood near Diane's burgundy Ford hatchback with its recently crumpled fender.
"Quick question," Jackie said. "How do we get back to Nightvale?"
"Huh," Diane answered. The three of them stood for a moment, staring at the two cars and the pile of flamingos, waiting for an idea to come to them. A voice from behind them interrupted their thought.
"Hey," the voice said. It was the man in the tan jacket.
"Troy told me that he's leaving for good."
"I don't care," Jackie said. "How do we get back?"
"That's what I was coming to say," he said. "It might be impossible. I'm sorry."
Jackie punched him. The man in the tan jacket holding a deerskin suitcase fell down into a sitting position in the dirt, but said nothing. The flies did nothing.
"I'll let you know when you're sorry enough," she said.
"It's not my fault," he said. "I just drive to where I think Nightvale is, and sometimes I get there. Sometimes I don't. I wish I could tell you."
"Jackie," Diane said, "Nightvale has a way of bringing home its own. I think we could drive in any direction and still get home. We live in a weird place."
"Man, we really do."
"It's super weird," said Josh.
"The best kind of weird," said Jackie.
She waved to the mayor, who was still sitting in the dirt.
"See ya."
They got in their cars. Diane and Josh in the Ford, Jackie in the Mercedes. They would drive out the direction they had come. They would stay together, not losing sight of the other car. They would keep a plastic flamingo and a cell phone in each car just in case. Jackie rolled down her window and looked down at the man in the tan jacket.
"What's the deal with the flies anyway? Why does a mayor have a briefcase full of flies?"
"You don't make much money as mayor of a small town. I have to have a full-time job to make ends meet."
"Fly salesman, huh?"
"Fly salesman."
"Makes sense."
Without breaking eye contact, Jackie gunned the engine until a fog of white smoke enveloped the fenders. There was a sharp squeal, and the smoke lifted like a slow curtain, revealing her absence.
The Voice of Nightvale. City Council announced today that, in addition to history, the following other things are also bunk. Memory, timepieces, walnuts, all hawks, obviously, most advanced mathematics, trigonometry and higher, and cats. The City Council clarified that they are not announcing this to anyone in particular, and that if anyone in particular should hear this announcement, they can do with it what they will. Although, they added that the only legal thing to do with it is to forget it. "Forget it immediately," they repeated, swaying together and moving their digits around in a sparkle fingers-like motion. Before dismissing the press conference, the City Council, looking somewhat emotionally hurt, said that it's a nervous tic, that thing with their fingers, and that they wish people wouldn't make fun of it by calling it sparkle fingers. Oh, bad news, listeners. Our newest intern, Sheila, fell into the pit that Carlos was using to bury the dangerous plastic flamingos. Rather than touching one and reliving her life, she touched hundreds as she rolled down the side of the pit, while at the same time dying not from the length of her fall, but from the subsequent change in velocity at the end of it. She awoke again as a baby, in hundreds of worlds at once.
all of the infant versions of herself having awareness of the gaping silence that was her one true dead self. To the family and friends of intern Sheila, we extend our greatest condolences. Know that she was a good and hard-working intern, and that she died doing what she loved, simultaneously living and dying in infinite fractal defiance of linear time. If anyone is looking for college credit or to prepare for the life-threatening dangers of a career in community radio, come on down to the station. If one of the intern shirts fits you, you're in. The Night Vale Council for Language Management would like to remind you of this last month's word definition changes. Fork now means a momentary feeling of evening as a passes in front of the sun. Loss now means whatever the opposite of loss is. Migraine now means a large scorpion perched on the back of a person's neck, where they cannot see it or feel it and would have no idea it was there if no one told them. And of course, this week's wild card word is brood. For the next week, it means anything you want it to mean, which is very, very brood. Remember that misuse of language can lead to miscommunication, and that miscommunication leads to everything that has ever happened in the whole of the world. Larry Leroy, out on the edge of town, has announced that he has found many wonderful things in his most recent sweep of the desert. A metallic sphere that fell from the sky and whistles softly to itself as though bored. A double of himself, whom he has not seen in years, and whom he growled at until the double ran away. A number of plants, all exactly where they were before, but all a little bit different, as though they were somehow alive. A rock, but he won't tell us where. A body dressed in a gray pinstripe suit, lying sprawled on a dune. A new way of breathing that he says gives him verve and spunk. He said it just like that, punching at the air in front of him. Verve and spunk, he shouted. Verve and spunk. He seems to have gotten off track from his original plan of listing what he had found in the desert and ran down the street breathing with his new method, punching the air and shouting, verve and spunk, to passers-by. That's it from me now, listeners. But something in me says that this is no ending. The night outside is bright and breezy and full of dangerous secrets. There is a taste in the air like tarnished silver, like the flesh of an extinct animal now only remembered through our spinal cord and the hairs on our back. Something in me says that this is only the start, the moment after which all other moments will come. And looking back at the point we are at now, we will know that this was before, and that all of our nows from here on out will be after. This is the only way we know time works. Stay tuned next for the sound of a creaking spine and the soft collapse of paper onto itself. And as always, good night, Night Vale. Good night. Jackie knocked on Lucinda's door. Diane answered.
Come in. You look great. How are you feeling?
Jackie pulled her close with her completely healed left arm and let the hug go long past what is casually comfortable.
I'm glad you're here, Jackie said.
Glad you're here too, said Diane through the constriction of the embrace.
It seemed that Jackie had recovered her strength. Lucinda met them in the kitchen and gave Jackie a kiss.
It's always wonderful to see you, dear.
You too, Mom.
In the months since their cars had, only a few hours after leaving King City, rolled across the Night Vale city line, Jackie had hired Diane as a part-time bookkeeper at the pawn shop, while she continued to look for a more permanent job. This had allowed Jackie some free time outside of work, and given her someone to pass the time with. She saw every day what an active mother Diane was in Josh's life, talking regularly to and about him, helping him with school and society, allowing him to be a child and to become an adult. And this reminded Jackie to visit her own mother. Diane also often literally reminded her.
We should stop by and visit Lucinda, Diane would say after work.
Today, all of them were at Lucinda's house for a barbecue. There was everything you needed for a barbecue. A small plastic bucket full of mud. Everything.
Happy birthday, Diane said to Jackie. Sounds like someone has decided to finally grow older.
How old are you now?
21. I skipped 20. Not everyone has to turn 20. Don't know when I'll turn 22. Maybe in a few years, when I'm ready. Is Troy coming?
The Troys had settled in the barista district. It turned out that he was an excellent barista, just as he had been excellent at everything else he had done. Carlos had taken to issuing each Troy a pink flamingo, which had the double effect of removing the flamingos from Night Vale for good and taking each Troy out of his current reality and into a reality of his own, where he could be a helpful and competent individual, rather than a helpful and competent horde. It was a highly scientific solution, and Cecil would not stop talking on the radio about how brilliant it was that Carlos had thought of it.
Nothing is more attractive than someone who is good at their job, Cecil often said.
Josh invited him, but honestly, I think even he doesn't really want his father to come. Speaking of which, how about you and Troy?
There is no me and Troy, Jackie said. It's too late for that. Besides, I already have a family.
She took her mother's arm. Lucinda laughed and patted her hand.
That's nice of you, dear. But I don't mind if you want to spend a little time with Troy. Not for him. I could care less about him. But you might get something out of it.
Have you remembered any of your childhood? Asked Diane. Lucinda let go of her daughter's hand.
No, said Jackie. We're working on it. But might be it's gone for good.
Even if we don't have the then, dear, we have the now, her mother said, biting into one of the wax avocados, as she always did when trying to process her feelings.
You really should stop eating those, Mom, Jackie said. They're not real.
Should and will are different words, said Lucinda, taking a second big bite.
Jackie shook her head and went out the sliding glass door into the backyard. Josh came barreling into her.
Jackie!
He was small and round with broad feathered wings and wide green eyes.
Looking good, said Jackie. Have you ever tried flying with those?
No, he said, flapping self-consciously. I wouldn't know how.
You've flown as a housefly before.
That's different. I don't go high or far at all. I wouldn't know how to fly with wings this big.
You won't know until you try, man.
Can I help you at the pawn shop sometime? I've never had a job. It sounds kind of awful and kind of fun.
It's exactly both, she said.
Tell you what, if you can fly higher than the roof, I'll let you do a shift with me tomorrow.
Josh grinned nervously, but first he turned to Diane, who was watching the conversation unfold with something less than enthusiasm.
Is it okay, Mom?
It's okay, Josh, she said, not sure if it was okay.
She hid her anxiety behind smiling eyes.
I'll always be a mother, she thought, but I'll always be a lot of things. I wonder what the next of those things will be.
Josh looked back at Jackie,
who nodded and gave him a thumbs up with her empty left hand. And then he looked up at the sky. His wings worked, and his body slowly lifted off the grass.
"Please try not to hit any windows, dear," said Lucinda from her lawn chair.
"Just be careful, please," said Diane. Josh banked around experimentally. He was a little lower than the rooftop. Diane watched him, one hand over her eyes, one over her heart.
"Watch your head,"
she said, but to remind him of something he already knew, not to tell him something he didn't. Jackie gave him another thumbs up, and he returned it to her. He tried a loop, and managed a wavering somersault instead. Troy watched all this, sitting in his car just outside the house. He had both hands on the wheel, and he was smiling. It was definitely a smile. He had been sitting there for a couple of minutes trying to make a decision. As he watched Josh, he thought about what Jackie had said about helpfulness, and what Diane had said about his role in their lives. And he made a decision. From where he was flying, Josh could see the other red-tiled rooftops of Sandpit, between the identical rooftops of Palm Frond Majesty and the Weeping Miner, and other housing developments with elaborate names and houses failing to live up to them. And just down the way, the strip mall, with Big Rico's Pizza and Carlos's Lab, and beyond that, City Hall, draped in black velvet for the night, and a young woman walking to her car, Mayor Cardinal, yes, but also Dana again for the night, going to meet her recently cured brother for a celebratory dinner at Tourniquet. And beyond that, the tall black walls of the Forbidden Dog Park, and in the parking lot of the Desert Flower Bowling Alley and Arcade Fun Complex, Cecil, from the radio station, and Carlos, the scientist, with bowling bags in one hand and the other's hand in the other, strolling inside for league night. A kiss before they opened the door, and then they were gone. And beyond that, the Moonlight All-Night Diner, which, true to its name, was as busy then as it was at any other hour. With Laura offering fruit from the gnarled branches of her body, and Steve Carlsberg digging heartily into a slice of invisible pie. And beyond that, Diane's old office, full of computers and tables where work could be done, although no one knew why they did it. Where Catherine had stayed late to finish up some work at a desk which was tarantula-free, although she still flinched at imagined light touches on her hand. And beyond that, the low bulk of the public library, outwardly quiet, quietly seething with librarians. And near that, his own house, which was just now thinking of him, and where a faceless old woman was secretly refolding all of his clothes. And beyond that, the Nightvale Daily Journal building, whose sole occupant was considering a wall of hatchets, ready to get down to the bloody business of local journalism. And beyond that, the movie theater, its blinking lights showing through the sentient haze of Stacy as she prepped the box office for the midnight movie audiences. Silent customers who fade into being in their seats at exactly midnight, watching movies that play on the screen even with the projector shut off, before fading back away into nothing, without even waiting for the ending credits to finish. And beyond that, the hole in the vacant lot out back of the Ralphs, and the Ralphs itself, offering fresh food and low, low prices, although never at the same time. And beyond that, old woman Josie outside her house, no paper in her hand, and Erica, and Erica, and Erica as well, all outside in the garden. And the tower of Nightvale Community Radio, blinking light atop. And Jackie's pawn shop, formerly Lucinda's pawn shop, a place that was just then closed, that was now closed more often than it wasn't, because its owner wanted to be somewhere else sometimes. And the windows of the hospital, doctors flitting from one to the next
in an unexplained instant. And the car lot, where used car salesmen loped joyfully over their car-strewn territory, barking at a moon that they did not understand. But then no one else did, really. And the brownstone spire, ancient and humming a malevolent tone, and a cordon of helpful helicopters keeping everyone free. And out past all of that sand, a small eternity of sand, desert like there would never be anything else, and beyond that, eventually, something else, because there is always something else. And King City, no longer forgotten, an ordinary town with an ordinary mayor who was just then taking off his jacket, a man in a short-sleeve shirt holding a deerskin suitcase, and stepping into his house where a family greeted him with his correct name at last. And beyond it and around it, all other ordinary towns and all ordinary people who were sleeping or not sleeping, who were metaphorically or literally alive, or metaphorically or literally not, gone but alive in our hearts, or gone and forgotten, all existing somewhere on a spectrum of loss, and beyond them and around them the oceans and forests, momentarily teeming with life before the great planetary hush. And out beyond that, a sky that was coming around slowly to the idea of sunset, or was, somewhere else, just having the first thought of day. And beyond that, the wavering red lights of spy satellites, watching, and the steady blue lights of unidentified spacecraft, watching, and the white light of what we mistakenly assume is the moon, watching. And beyond that, void. And void after that. Void on and on, with a scattered vanishing of non-void mixed in. And beyond that, so many mysteries that it didn't seem to Josh that he would be able to solve even one of them, not if he had all the time in the world. And he didn't have all the time in the world. And he would never solve even one mystery. He looked down, past a rooftop, which was way below him now, at Diane, who was laughing, with her arm around Jackie, who was laughing, hand in hand with Lucinda, who was laughing. "Wow," he said, "I'm higher up than I thought."
"No, man," Jackie said, "you can go way higher than that."
How to listen to the Welcome to Night Vale podcast. This is the end of the audiobook. Either you finished the audiobook, or you skipped right ahead to the ending to see what happens. Listen, we're not here to tell you how to listen to this book. If you enjoyed this novel, we recommend you join us in our ongoing Welcome to Night Vale podcast, which has been telling stories about this strange desert town since 2012. Our podcast comes out twice monthly online and is completely free. You can download it to your computer or listening device through iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay.fm, SoundCloud, any of the hundreds of free podcasting apps, or by going to WelcomeToNightVale.com. You can also stream all of our episodes at our YouTube channel and even watch some bonus behind-the-scenes footage of the Welcome to Night Vale cast. All of the episodes going back to the very start are available to download right now. Or if that sounds like too much time investment, just hop right in wherever we are now. You'll be in the swing of things in no time. Well, sometime. It will take longer than zero time. We also regularly do live shows all over the world, more than 100 shows in 11 different countries at the time of this writing. These live shows are a full evening of Night Vale storytelling, with live music and guest stars, designed so that you do not need to know anything about the podcast to enjoy.
Keep an eye on WelcomeToNightVale.com to join us next time we pass through wherever you live. Wherever you live is our favorite place to perform. See you there.